podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Red Tinted Glasses. And Callum, we normally do a live episode, but this one's going to be a bit pre-recorded because I wasn't feeling 100% on Monday evening when we were jumping on the recording. And we don't want to put out episodes that aren't to our ability at 100% and maybe underprepared, or as some of you might call it, an Aberdeen performance at Parkhead.
I think that's very, very fair. Also, we couldn't do it right after the game because you were off gallivanting, weren't you, Glenn? Did you have a nice time at Disneyland Paris?
Oh, I had a much better time than those who were at Parkhead, I think that's for sure. I mean, I remember meeting Spider-Man and then checking the score and it was 2-0 at halftime. And I thought, wasn't expecting much. And then a little bit later, I was sitting down at supper and overheard some Ouija accent saying, oh, we beat Aberdeen 6-0. And I was like, what? I was like, surely we didn't capitulate that badly in the second half. Well, we didn't capitulate that badly in the second half. We capitulated that badly in injury time. But so that was a bit of a sore one to end the first day. And I'm pretty glad that I didn't have to catch the highlights until I came back on Thursday and put myself through seeing the goals. But we'll definitely get on to talking about that game, Callum. But we always going to start off with the news. And it's been a quiet week, I think it's safe to say, for Aberdeen, hasn't it? Not much has happened.
Oh, no. I don't think we're going to struggle here.
No. Because one of the things, of course, that happened whilst I was away, I remember coming home on the Monday or Tuesday night, and my phone lighting up with notifications. And I think to most fans' surprise, and certainly my surprise, because I was very adamant we wouldn't sell out, that the tickets for the League Cup final had sold out in what felt like record time. Alan Burrows and Jamie Howell both coming out and admitting individual mistakes. A bit of a shame that Jamie's had to do that because Jamie does an excellent work as a ticket office manager and doing a lot of things smoothly, and he's on paternity leave as well. So congratulations on the birth of your second kid, Jamie. I'm good friends with him as well. So, you know, very brave of him to come out into the harsh world of social media and put his hands up to what is an honest mistake, but a bit of a fiasco that didn't really make the club look too great, did it, Callum?
No, it didn't. When it sold out, I was like, wow, that's incredible. And then I saw like a load of Rangers fans claiming they had tickets in the Aberdeen end. And, you know, I thought they were just like at it. They were just, you know, making it up, trying to wind everyone up, fair enough, whatever. I'm sure we'd probably do the same. I never really considered properly that they had snapped up like a fair amount of tickets. Good, at least, that the club have been able to sort of rectify that. To a degree, unfortunate, like other Aberdeen fans have sort of been caught in the crossfire. Some people had their tickets cancelled. All round, a bit of a shambles. However, if it all works out in the end, it's fine. And if people who did genuinely have tickets, if they're able to get them back, then that is obviously a very, very good thing. But no, not great. Not a great look, you don't feel, from Aberdeen. But look, they've learnt their lesson, I'm sure, and that sort of thing will not happen again. And at least they've been able to rectify.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it was kind of weird that one of the first times we go away from, you know, using that kind of staggered sales process in terms of the loyalty points, and we chuck out 4 tickets per account, was always kind of open to a bit suspect. And I can't help but feel it was a bit of a cheap shot from the club in terms of getting back at the SFA for not giving us that 50-50 split. And it was a cheap way of being able to sell as many tickets as quickly as possible. So potentially did shoot ourselves in the foot. And as you said, you know, some Aberdeen fans getting caught in the crossfire, so to speak, in terms of having their tickets cancelled. Although I know those will have then gone on to email the club and that will have been quickly rectified. But also good that the club have managed to identify those that have potentially bought that shouldn't have been buying tickets in the Aberdeen end. And let's just hope that the remaining tickets for the South Stand Upper, I think it is, that the club are patiently waiting on, are delivered quickly and we can get the rest of those sold.
Yeah, definitely. Because it would be fantastic to sell out with our own fans, it has to be said. I think that would be a bit of a two-finger sort of to those who decided that we weren't getting an equal split. If we are able to sell out, and also gives us a better chance of getting a result in the cup final. But just here's hoping that, you know, I mentioned they sort of rectified it. Here's hoping that it has gone perfectly to plan after the big fuck up.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like I said, it takes a lot of like honesty and integrity from those individuals, as I mentioned, both Alan and Jamie coming out and not just hiding behind a blanket club statement, but to put their both their heads above the parapet and you know, take responsibility is quite admirable in this day and age when a lot of people would just kind of hide behind one club generated statement. So well done to both of them for admitting what has just been an honest mistake. And look, both of us will make honest mistakes. I'm sure you've maybe made a couple of mistakes since you started at Tesco. I know I've made it. No, if your supervisor is listening, and no to me if anyone from my work's listening as well. But look, these things happen, and it's been rectified. It's just unfortunate the way it's had to play out. But there was some good news from AB24 with the fact that the club posted a net profit of 1.1 million in the club's annual accounts, unlike the Rangers and Hearts, who posted losses. And you've got to take into account as well, Callum, that profit being posted does not take into account our European adventure this year. So strong signals of maybe a couple of years of decent profit to be posted by the club.
Certainly. So you would think next year things would look even better with the European money, and hopefully with more to come in future years as well. And yeah. Also, sort of not really sure if the Ramadani sale was involved in that. You believe it wasn't, which then it would make things look even better. My one concern would be that we did make a profit because of player sales, and that's worrying that we're probably might have to do the same again in future. But I suppose when you're a club like us and you're trying to get to a certain level, that these sort of things are what we're going to have to do. And if we can do so making a profit, then that's absolutely great.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it's kind of worrying, but that's obviously the business model, if you want to call it that, that the club are going down, and that's the model that we're looking at actually doing. And the likes of Yulba Ramadani is a key example of that working. It's just a shame that there's maybe going to be a few others that we see that working on in the maybe near future. But look, if it's giving us a profit and it's allowing us to then, you know, unearth similar talent, if you look at the way Rubizic has kind of come onto a game in recent weeks anyway, he's a player that's unearthed from that kind of area of Europe that we seem to be targeting now. And I think one other area, of course, that Cormac was quite proud to shout about is our season tickets, in terms of the fact that the kind of average age has come down, and the growth in that season ticket area around the teenage, early 20 years is growing, which is obviously quite good for future years to keep that fan base growing as time continues. And as you say, hopefully we get to see more regular European football included in that too.
Certainly, and hopefully that the numbers in that age range will only increase as well with the introduction of student prices next season. That would just be excellent, Alan, if you're listening.
And nudge, nudge. We've mentioned European football before we came on to record tonight. This is Monday the 20th that we're doing this recording. It's come out that Eintracht Frankfurt fans have been banned from travelling to Aberdeen on the 14th of December. A dead rubber, in all effect, a game I was only really looking forward to see the backing that Frankfurt fans brought. So really disappointed news, and it was due to their fans setting off pyrotechnics in a game. So interesting to see kind of what punishment maybe follows towards Aberdeen in terms of, obviously, you know, it's quite highlighted about the pyrotechnic being thrown in the game over in Frankfurt, but also interesting to see what punishment UEFA then follow for the alleged racist behaviour from Pauk fans in our most recent game as well. So the stand, the stand's been set. Let's see what follows. But yeah, disappointing news that our European campaign won't end with the amount of Germans that were predicted, or we could see a load of Germans just milling around Aberdeen ticketless.
Yeah, I mean, interesting, you know, the fact that they have banned them. I do wonder if they had, they would have done so had this game actually meant something. I suppose it's probably easier for them to, you know, to then ban them for this game. I'm a little bit disappointed, though, because certainly having the Pauk fans at Pittodrie was very enjoyable. Definitely the best set of away fans I've seen. In terms of noise at Pittodrie, certainly for a very long time anyway, sort of put Celtic and Rangers to shame, if I'm honest. So it would have been nice to see Eintracht Frankfurt fans over. However, given that sort of the pyrotechnic thing that happened over there, being right next to the fence, I suppose there's a sort of silver lining in that I won't have one lobbed at me. So it's okay.
as some people might say, calling Frankfurt fans over on the back of that. But a few people, you know, kind of commenting on the back of that is, what? Why do we get punishment in terms of the economic benefits to the city with all the German fans coming? Not in this case, but also in terms of the gate receipts that we would have been generated, because I think it was almost guaranteed to be a sellout from Frankfurt fans, certainly speaking to those I know in the police. The Police Scotland and the council were expecting in excess of 5,000 Germans to travel, and obviously I think the allocation would have been just under 2,000. So slightly disappointing news in that sense. And I just wonder, kind of a lot of people are also wondering this as well, is where do Aberdeen stand in terms of compensation from missing out on that ticket revenue? Can we maybe drum up enough support to sell out the ground on our own back? I know maybe Rangers fans tuning in are thinking, well, you would struggle to shift that amount for a cup final. Well, we've proved them wrong already. Can we prove people wrong and sell out Pittodrie just based on our own support?
I certainly hope so. Otherwise, I would just like to see Derek Ray in the away end just by himself, to be honest. That would be funny.
Yeah, although maybe there's a few fans of Frankfurt going to be creating accounts and buying up home tickets. We'll see what happens in the coming weeks. And one final thing before we move on to the football, slightly more positive news and before we go into the doom and gloom, I guess. And obviously, you know, Callum, we do this podcast off our own backs. You know, we don't have kind of sponsorship. We don't have a main source of income whilst doing this podcast. You know, we both put our own money into either using Zoom like we're doing tonight or using StreamYard when we do the live videos, and any support that we get on this podcast is greatly appreciated. I think, you know, it's about half a penny per view. I think it works out maybe even less than that on YouTube. So that's really the only way we make any money, and that barely covers the monthly costs we do. So what we've actually decided to do, obviously coming up to Christmas, is the money that we've made over the last 3 months, just over 60 quid, I think it is, we're going to put that towards Aber Necessities. So we're going to buy a bunch of selection boxes and send it to Aber Necessities. If any of you want to support what is a fantastic local charity, Callum, I know you're going to edit this podcast and work on the description. So the link for Aber Necessities wish list will go on to the YouTube description and also the audio description as well. And for those of you that follow us on social media, we'll get that posted in the tweets for the episode going out as well. So basically, it'll just take you to Amazon and you can select the gifts that Aber Necessities most need, and that'll go to helping children who are a little bit less off, well less off than us just now, at a time when it would be great to see as many children as possible get something special at this time of year. So we did the same last year. I think we raised about £500 last year and gave that to Aber Necessities. It's going to be slightly less, but look, every little helps at this time of year.
Certainly it does. I mean, times are sort of tough enough as they are with Christmas around the corner as well. Costs for every family certainly rise. So it's definitely a worthwhile cause. As Glenn said, they help provide sort of essentials and things for underprivileged children. And anything we can do to help, excellent. And if you are able to as well, we would encourage you to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Callum, we've discussed the news. Let's get into the football. Unfortunately, as you said, I was off gallivanting, so didn't see the game. And as we've kind of discussed, this game really maybe scoreline suggests differently. I don't know, you tell me, because I know you'll have watched the game in its entirety. I feel if we sat here and discussed the game play by play, you might as well have gone back to the 4-0 defeat, the 5-0 defeat, and copy and pasted what we discussed there and insert it now. But we're not going to do that. So what we're going to do, instead of just rinsing and repeating what we speak about every time we go to Parkhead, what I want you to do, Callum, is give us three talking points from the game the other week, and we'll sit and discuss those instead, because it's going to be slightly different and probably less frustrating to listen to than us ranting about yet another defeat at Parkhead.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned those sort of 4-5, now 6-0 in our last three visits to Parkhead, which is alarming, not only to suffer so heavily, but also the fact it seems to be getting worse. That's certainly alarming. But I went through those sort of three games and looked at the match stats, we have allowed Celtic 28 shots on target in those games. Meanwhile, we've only had one shot on target ourselves. That's a bit of a concern, isn't it? And sort of building on to that, in fact, we've only had one shot on target and they've had 28 shots on target. They've scored 53.57% of those shots. I've done some research. I know everyone is shocked. People probably keeled over the fact that I've done some research. But that is a massive concern. And so does it point to the fact that maybe Kel Roos should be doing better? I know you maybe think that about some of the goals. And yeah, it would be very difficult to disagree. But also, why are we giving up so many good chances? And they, of course, they've got good players. They're going to take those chances. They're scoring more than one in every two shots on target.
Yeah, like you said, keeling over at the fact that you did some research. I was keeling over when you were sending those messages earlier, let alone at the fact that you'd done the research. And it is quite hard to stomach. And I think for me, you know, exactly what we spoke about in the preview episode, which is laughably frustrating. I don't even know if that makes sense, but like most of our performances at Parkhead, they don't make sense either. Because we spoke about the fact that we were going to Parkhead and the previous two times under Barry Robson, we'd been embarrassed. And up until probably the 90th minute, I don't know what the performance was like, Callum. Was it embarrassing? Was it really that much of a struggle?
It wasn't a struggle for Celtic. It was a struggle for us. I don't know if embarrassing the word. It just was terrible. I suppose we expected that going to that game, especially after so much was given against Pauk just sort of 3 days prior. However, you would have certainly expected more, at least to make a little bit of fist of things, a little bit more, make things more difficult for Celtic.
I think for me, it's the conceding the three goals in injury time that I find totally unacceptable. And once again, listening to Chris Boyd and agreeing with what he's come out and said, I also am really struggling to comprehend. But I suppose, would you maybe caveat that and say the fact that, you know, you just mentioned the Pauk game and the efforts that went into that, but we've also had that run of away games, that kind of squad maybe not being utilised as much as we've maybe alluded to wanting to see. Was it maybe just one game too far for that current squad and the players who were probably on their last legs going into that game?
Possibly. But sort of referring back to Chris Boyd's comments, you know, we've really laid a finger on them the whole game. It's 3-0. We've had one shot on target throughout the match. And we then collapse and concede a further three goals in added time. At that point, just make sure it doesn't get any worse and get up the fucking road and enjoy the 2 weeks off if they are allowed it in terms of players not going away, etc. It's the collapse for me that really is worrying. The fact they couldn't just sort of shut up shop and accept a 3-0 defeat and get up the road with it. That's the worst part for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even accepting a 3-0 defeat sounds horrible to say.
Well, yeah.
I guess given the way the game was going, you do accept it. The fact that we're now sitting speaking about a 6-0 defeat is absolutely horrible. And it's, once again, another failed transition from Thursday into Sunday. And I know, obviously, I mentioned about the caveat putting in there, but, you know, we've only got two games left of Thursday, Sunday football. One of those Sunday games is a cup final, and I can't help but feel worried about that. I know the Frankfurt game, you know, we've spoken about playing the kids and that in the game more so now that it feels like it's a dead rubber, but it's so concerning the fact that the players are struggling so much to transition and that the management haven't learned in that time, because you can't just put it down to the group stages being a factor, because we had the two games against Haken as well. So that's five games we've had and five terrible performances on the back of it.
Yeah, it's a concern, and you'd hope that this time next year we perhaps have learned from it, should we be in the position again, which hopefully we will. But they definitely struggled after the Pauk game. I mean, we're 2-0 down inside, whatever, 15 minutes. The game's gone at that point. We missed a good chance. Johnny Hayes just inexplicably failed to even hit the target. But at that point, this brings me on to my third talking point sort of this game is in the fact that clearly things weren't going our way at all. The game was gone after, as I say, sort of 15 minutes, especially once we'd missed that Johnny Hayes chance. We only committed 8 fouls throughout the 90 minutes, though. And I know I'm not suggesting we just go taking bodies. I'm not suggesting that at all. Yeah. But when the game isn't going your way, break it up. Don't make it so easy for Celtic to just knock it around as if you're not even there. Break up the play. Force them to try and do something different. We didn't do that, and that's also a concern for me. I mean, maybe lacking a bit of sort of streetwise play, I guess. That's not a phrase. But my point was, 8 fouls at Parkhead when you're getting battered, you've got to just break up the play and make things more difficult for them. Don't allow them to get into that fluidity, which, well, we did after 15 minutes, however.
But how many times, Callum, do we come on this podcast and say, after a heavy defeat or a defeat in that manner, a 3 or 4 nil, and it seems to be every time we play Celtic or Rangers, why didn't we lay a glove on them? Why are we so powder puff in these games? You know, show a bit of fight, show a bit of passion, show that you're at least caring for the jersey that you're wearing or those that have actually made the effort to maybe come straight from Greece and then travel down on a Sunday to a venue where we really don't perform very well at the best of times. That's, for me, what's frustrating. And to go back to kind of the earlier point as well about the 4-0, the 5-0 and the 6-0, is the manner of the goals that we're conceding in those three games are dreadful. The goals that we conceded at Parkhead 2 weeks ago are disgustingly bad. The first goal, I don't know what Kel's doing in terms of trying to punch the ball. And then Jack McKenzie obviously expects his keeper to do that and just loses all sense of kind of awareness and you know, Celtic score from it. But Kel's performance, I mean, fucking hell. It was like he was scared of the ball at times. I think, you know, when I was texting you, can't remember if it was the fourth or the fifth goal, but you described him as falling like a sack of tatties. And then the penultimate goal or the last goal was it, you said, when the amount of room he gave to O. Kel's performance he does make a couple of good saves in the first half to maybe limit the score a little bit, but the goals that we're conceding, I'm looking at him, maybe the defending wasn't great, but he wasn't exactly making it difficult to keep the ball out of the net.
No, there certainly was a few of the goals you felt he could have done better. The one where he misses the cross, as you mentioned, then falling over like a sack tie. It's okay. It was a decent finish. Certainly the penalty, couldn't do anything about. It was a great penalty.
He doesn't really do much at penalties either. I think only that Kevin Nisbet one's only when he saved.
That's been nice. It was a good penalty. And then the last one, I just felt he showed so much of his near post. He was just asking for him to slot it away. I know it's one-on-one. It's tough, but he wasn't sort of in the centre of his goal at all. He showed him so much in the near post and just made it so easy for him to put it past him. A concern for sure. No, alarm bells aren't properly ringing, but it's a bit of a concern.
Why would you say alarm bells aren't quite ringing then?
Because he does come up in big moments still, Kel Roos. If sort of we were seeing, sorry to mention it, but the sort of Joe Lewis type performances where week in, week out, we're conceding pretty horrendous goals through some questionable goalkeeping, then I'd be worried. I'd be very worried. But he does still come in big moments. As you said, he did have a fair few very decent saves at Parkhead, and I'm sure he will bail us out throughout the course of the season. Because let's be honest, I can't see Ross doing taking his shirt anytime soon. So alarm bells aren't ringing too often, but I just hope he can sort of cut some of this nonsense out, because it just seemed like tomfoolery, if we're honest.
Yeah, it was just like he'd downed tools and his mind was already turned to what he was going to be doing on the 2 weeks off. I think that's slightly harsh on Julius, because I think for the last couple of seasons, the defense in front of him was an absolute bomb scare as well, which really didn't help his stats much. But I know each their own on that opinion. Going back to the point that you made about kind of the commitment to the cause, that is a concern when, you know, you look kind of coming up to this weekend again, we've got a game against Rangers. And going back to that point that Chris Boyd made about, you know, it's 3-0 going into injury time, just park the bus, get up the road, take your medicine basically and go again. And when we do go again this Sunday lunchtime, live on Sky against Rangers, we're not going to be sitting back and accepting pressure. Slightly different, given that obviously we're at the home team this time. But the manner of the last three defeats at Parkhead, it just plays into those conspiracy theories, theorists at Ibrox, that we do lay down to Celtic and we do raise our game to Rangers, doesn't it?
It does. It does play into things. We do have one more talking point, but we will return to it. I find myself weirdly sort of agreeing a little bit with Chris Boyd in terms of the fact the results between Celtic, us versus Celtic and us versus Rangers, there is a difference there.
Yeah.
There is also the point that Celtic are obviously better than Rangers. They certainly are. So it's naturally more difficult. But it's the application sort of... I mean, like, you know, we turned up to Parkhead. Us as fans, you know, we go into that game thinking, yeah, we're going to get beat. It's fine. Mm. But the players went in with that sort of attitude. It looked like, I'm not saying they did, but it looked like that kind of thing, and they don't apply themselves as much. And also, I think between the last two games only at Park at Ibrox, 10 shots on target compared to one across three games at Parkhead.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You know, Barry Robson was very quick to defend the players' mentality in a couple of games. I think it was the Pout game, especially, you know, being 2-0 up and then throwing that away. Is there a mentality problem amongst the players when we go to Parkhead then?
There possibly could be. I don't know. I don't know if I think necessarily there is, but it's like, I suppose just looking at the track record, it would be very difficult to like sort of
argue against it, is it?
Yeah. But also at the same time, having looked at previous results, like it'd be very difficult for them going in there reasonably, realistically thinking we can go there and win this game. It would be difficult. However, they do have to do that ultimately. And it looked like maybe they didn't have that belief sort of from the off. And I guess understandably so, but they're both physically and emotionally knackered as well after the Pout game. But it we'll compare that with how we play against Rangers. It'll be a stark contrast. And I suppose also look at how we went to Ibrox and played 1-3-1. Okay, we didn't play away in Europe in the midweek, but we did play against Ross County in the midweek in the build up that game as well.
Yeah, that's fair as well. And you know, but the point about being, you know, physically and emotionally battered from the Pout game, you could argue that Celtic were very much in the same kind of fitting given their result in Madrid. I know obviously 48 hours prior to our game in Greece, but you know, they got hammered 6-0 and then turned up and hammered us 6-0. But it's just disappointing that it almost feels like it's acceptable now that we're just going down to Parkhead and getting battered. There's not that kind of anger and disappointment. It's just like, well, we knew it was coming. Anyway, who's next? And unfortunately, next is Rangers. And it just allows that narrative to be drawn and spoken about that, you know, if we were to go and win on Sunday or get any form of result that isn't a defeat, then people will say, oh, look, they've tried in their cup final, blah, blah, blah. You know, just that usual Ouija narrative that comes out of Govan when this fixture comes around. But of course, we said we were going to speak about three kind of talking points. You've mentioned the kind of concessions of goals. You've mentioned that lack of fight in midfield and the lack of bookings. What's your third one then, Callum?
Well, not even bookings, but a player who did get booked, Slobodan Rubicic. He's been a lot better in recent weeks, we think, or certainly I think anyway. I think that's sort of the general consensus from what I can gather. However, he did clatter Kyogo.
To put it lightly.
Now, I would describe this challenge as maybe overzealous. However, ultimately, he goes in and he wins the ball.
Yeah.
Kyogo, if he'd gone in with the same fucking heart that Rubicic had gone in, would have won the ball, wouldn't have got fucking clattered or nearly as bad. And that's sort of my point. Yes, okay, Rubicic did end up, they clashed heads. Rubicic did win the ball, however. And Kyogo, we've seen it a lot, he goes in to try and win the fouls. He goes in to try and win the fouls. Whereas if he'd gone in and tried to play the ball, first of all, if you don't think Rubicic has played the ball, if Kyogo had done it, the ball would have went in a completely different direction. So maybe you should get some specs. However, what do you make of that? A lot was made of it. Celtic fans were fuming. Almost everyone else was sort of like, well, he's gone in and won the ball. And people have seen the antics from Kyogo, which is, you know, he's a good player. He doesn't need to be doing that sort of shite, but he does. However, it's hard when you've got a 6'4" Serbian, Montenegrin, coming flying in at you. I do understand that. But if he goes in and tries to win the ball, he does. He didn't do that.
Yeah, well, you just look at how much of a fairy Kyogo is sometimes in the contact. You look at the penalty at Pinecastle that he won. I mean, penalties very loosely in terms of how much he was actually fouled by Alex Cochrane. And I think that's another example, as you say, where he kind of maybe shitebags a 50-50. And if he actually was a bit more full-blooded, he wouldn't have got knocked out in the manner that he did. And I think that's why Celtic fans are so up in arms around that challenge, is because, you know, their star man gets KO'd. And I know I didn't watch the game, but I think it was the way Rubisic celebrated the challenge. I think, I don't know if it was that one specifically, but there was stuff I was reading online about the way Rubisic almost celebrated being booked. But that challenge was a brilliant challenge. That is what you want to see when you're speaking about that fight, taking bodies, to quote you precisely. That is what I want to see from Aberdeen players when we go to Parkhead. Get in their faces, rile them up, because Kyogo obviously didn't like the challenge, you know, posted on Instagram about how he has no memory and this, that, and the next thing. Feel sympathy for me, yada, yada, yada. If we could have done that two or three times, you know, they would have realised they were in a game. It was the same on Thursday night against Pauk. We spoke about kind of winning the, you know, we didn't necessarily clatter into Pauk players every now and again, but we were winning tactical fouls that was winding up their players, that was throwing them off their stride. If we could do that a few more times against Celtic, we could maybe throw a few of their players off their stride. They haven't been brilliant this season. You know, we've seen St Johnstone go to Parkhead and pick up a point. We've seen Celtic struggle in other games as well. You know, they got knocked out of the League Cup by Kilmarnock as well. They are beatable this season by teams. You know, if you want to throw the budget card into play, like Celtic fans love to do in European football, you know, we've got bigger budgets than the likes of St Johnstone and Kilmarnock, yet those two sides have gone and got better results and performances against Celtic compared to us.
Yeah, they drew at Hibs as well, 0-0. Mm-hmm. However, you don't sort of see the same argument between Aberdeen and Rangers about, oh, this is a cup final, they try harder than you do Hibs and Celtic. You don't, yeah. Ultimately, which is interesting. But sort of final point, I guess, for me on this game, you just knew that we were going to get battered and they were going to take it out on us after they got battered. And it sort of always has that feeling about it, and sort of why I'm always apprehensive whenever they get a bad result. You just know the next team they face in the league is going to get absolutely battered, because they like taking it out on us to make themselves feel better about being inexplicably terrible in Europe. So frustrating, but you know, there's been a bit of a Ruby witch hunt from a certain end of Glasgow. But let's end the discussion on him, I suppose, by discussing the fact that he scored his first goal for Montenegro during the international break, and he looked delighted about it, and I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, I'm so delighted for him to get his first senior international goal, and hopefully that's maybe the first goal to kick off getting a goal in the red of Aberdeen after he got a goal in the red of Montenegro. Unfortunately for him, ultimately coming to nothing with them failing to qualify for the Euros, but just obviously helping raise his stock and his profile a little bit more, and continuing maybe that confidence after the Daily Record tried to throw him under the bus by highlighting the Pauk challenge for kind of comparing it to Kyogo. But they claimed that challenge was against Lithuania, because of course he got booked against Lithuania. He also got booked against Hungary. So continuing his record of getting booked in games. But yeah, there seems to be this kind of witch hunt being taken by certain sections of the media, maybe fans of certain teams in the media, to keep Ruby's name in the press ahead of that cup final. And you just know that it's going to be very much an us against them mentality come the cup final. And this is why I put out on our Twitter feed that, you know, less fans, that's fine. You know, we're being kind of pushed into a corner, it's going to be very much a siege mentality. So those that are, you know, lucky enough to get the golden tickets for the final, you know, bring your voices. Let's get fully behind the team when it comes to them, because nobody wants to see us lift that League Cup on December the 17th, apart from those in red supporting Aberdeen. And it would be even sweeter to see us do it on the back of these sort of witch hunts and these kind of the fact that we're not getting those tickets as well. But, you know, good news for Ruby on the international front, good news for Aberdeen on the international front as well, with Jamie McGrath getting minutes in the Republic of Ireland's defeat to the Netherlands. Of course, there was a kind of hamstring scare around Jamie McGrath. So the fact that he got minutes the other night, it makes me feel confident we'll see him on Sunday against Rangers. And also, congratulations to Conor Barron, captaining the Scotland under 21 side to a very impressive 2-0 win away to Belgium. Conor playing a part in the second goal scored by Lyle Cameron, which has seen the Scots go up to second in the group at time of recording. And really impressive win for a team that's probably underperformed under Billy Stark as well. Duke got 10 minutes for Cape Verde. I saw him come on for a 10-minute cameo. Bojan Miowski, again, when we're recording this, are about 5 minutes from kicking off at home to England. So interesting to see if he can maybe do anything against them. Wasn't really at the best of nights against Italy either. But, you know, getting some minutes and, you know, if he was to score tonight again, that further enhances his reputation, doesn't it, Callum?
Yeah, kind of apprehensive about talking about that ahead of January, though. A little bit scary, but certainly good to see that Aberdeen are being represented on that international level. Particularly, I suppose, even better fact for Conor Barron, it's for Scotland under-21s. Someone who's just going sort of from strength to strength, it feels like, this season. But once again, just like to reiterate, get that fucking contract signed, mate.
Yeah, and Richard Jensen didn't play in Finland's first game of the qualifiers, stayed on the bench, but he is starting tonight against San Marino. So maybe got a little bit of a well-earned rest, but good to see him getting some minutes in ahead of the weekend. And of course, Callum, it is the return of club football this weekend. It is Rangers coming to town, and it's a Sunday lunchtime kickoff, which gives us a little bit less time to prepare for Helsinki. And having looked at the forecast for Helsinki, it's going to be a load of thermals needed. I saw the forecast for this weekend, where it's a high of -6 and a low of -13. And I don't think it gets above zero for kickoff. I think I saw -4 being touted as the temperature come kickoff time a week on Thursday. So certainly a cold one for those heading over to Helsinki like myself. But eyes on Sunday, it can't be as bad as last time out against Celtic, can it?
No, it can't be. And last time we played them, we were victors at their patch. So there should be confidence there. To be honest, the fact a lot of the international, the second round of games in this international break are today, or maybe teams or players have already played in them as well, is a good thing, I suppose, in terms of a little bit extra rest, 6 days between the games. That's encouraging. But we've got to be confident. It's at Pittodrie. We beat them down there 3-1. However, let's also caveat that with they've got a new manager and they unfortunately look better under him. Let's say that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Of course, you mentioned, of course, that the win last time out when the two sides met at Ibrox, that was a time when, you know, the manager, Michael Beale, was under pressure. And, you know, certainly speaking to a couple of Rangers fans at work, they were glad to see us win because it meant that they could see the end of Michael Beale. But unfortunately, Philip Clement's come in and, as you say, has looked pretty good so far in his time. They seem to be playing a different style of football, a lot of passing football. That's certainly something that we have to make sure we do not let Rangers implement when they come to town this weekend. We have to be dictating the way the game is played, the tempo of the game. We have to be imposing ourselves. We can't allow Rangers to come in and, you know, get their foot on the ball in the opening 10, 15 minutes and, you know, pass us about off the park. We need to be in their faces from the start. The crowd will 100% be up for this game, as we always are. I'm sure people will tell you when it comes to Rangers. I think more so for the fact that it feels like it's our first home game in forever, which is more why people will be up for it.
Yeah, that's why. I'm certainly very much looking forward to it. And I very much hope that we prove Chris Boyd right in a weird turn of events, in that we do see a very different performance. I think we will. Of course, the fact it's at home, as you mentioned, the crowd will be very much up for it. Ultimately, they're not as good a side as Celtic either, which provides a little bit more confidence. But the players have got to be hurting after that 6-0 defeat as well. And they'll have a point to prove, no doubt. A little bit of rest after a tough run as well, as we prepare to go into another one. So that's just excellent. But that's the price you pay for being absolutely class. So yeah, there we are.
You know, that's a point you mentioned there that we maybe kind of haven't kind of discussed in terms of when we were speaking about the Celtic game, is the price we almost have to pay for being a decent side. Although the performances the performances maybe don't show that all the time. But if we want to be this successful side going into European group stage football continuously, getting to cup finals, we need to accept the demand being put on us. And as much as we're kind of speaking about this season maybe being a learning curve for Barry Robson and some of the players, we need to show that learning a bit quicker.
I think so. And you probably hope that by now we're in that position now where, you know, they've had the experience, they've realised how tough it is. We've been through those spells where it's Thursday, Sunday, and then there's a midweek game in for something else. That the experience, they will benefit from that. A lot of these players haven't done that kind of thing. I think I, as much as many others, forget that. And you know, the adjustment would be difficult, but we're going into that another tough spell here. December, around the corner, going to be a very, very busy month. And it starts here. And let's hope we start on the right foot. I've no doubt that we're going to start with a 5-4-1 that sort of has been working for us in games like this, despite the fact maybe we've not been always getting the results, and sort of Parkhead aside, to be fair. I expect that to be the setup. I expect Barry and the boys to have a point to prove. They will be up for it. They'll have been hurting for this probably the whole 2 weeks after the back of that result. And they'll want to put it right. And certainly the fans will too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you mentioned about the December coming up and being a busy period. In fact, Sunday marks the first of 12 games between then and the 2nd of January, which, of course, afterwards we have a two-week break. So nice to fit in as many games as possible before we get time off for the winter break. But interesting you mentioned that formation, the Frankfurt formation, as it's kind of been dubbed this season. And I was going to ask you, do you think that is the formation that Barry will adapt in this game, with just the one up top kind of flooding that midfield and potentially looking to hit Rangers on the counter?
I think so. Mainly because most of our good results have come with that formation this season. Even when we've been sort of with a 5-3-2, although it's just a slight change with one more body in the midfield, that it wasn't convincing, where we have looked a little bit more convincing with the 5-4-1. I think Jamie McGrath getting up in support in Bjorkowski is absolutely key. It's probably going to be Bjorkowski, let's be honest. It's key. It's very good
tonight.
Oh god. Yeah, why have I said that? It'll be really annoying when, as soon as we end this, he gets injured. That would be difficult. But Jamie McGrath fit enough to play for Ireland, so you'd like to think he'd be in from the start. He's been, I think, surprising maybe for many so far this season. It'll just be then interesting to see who the other three in that midfield are. Graham Shinney probably takes up one of them, but then does he go with Dante's sort of the lean towards his physical attributes? And then between Conor Barron, who's been excellent, Clarkson maybe not so much, but also we know what he can do. So a little bit of a headache, I think. But I would certainly expect Barry to go that 5-4-1 today, this weekend.
I'd be having Conor Barron in that midfield. I think, you know, the fact he's coming off probably the buzz of captain in his country for the 21s and playing his role in that win, I think we've seen kind of the importance that he brings to the team. For me, he's kind of that pivot in midfield, either slowing the play down and restarting, or can fair pick a pass to start an attacking move. And then, kind of probably similar to what we did over in Greece, you've got the option of bringing Dante on as the game wears on. But we're kind of in that fortunate position where we can play one or the other. But I think we've got to be, not that Dante for me is not in our best 11, but I think we've got to be looking to play our strongest available 11. And for me, Connor just pips Dante, which is not something I think many folk would be saying at this point last season.
No. It will be interesting, though, if Jimmy McGarry will be fit enough to be in that best available 11. Jack McKenzie performed relatively well in recent weeks. We've sort of been praising him sheepishly after we've been critical. And that being said, there has been a couple little mistakes with the penalty at Parkhead, the red card at Hampden, which you'll know was very, very silly, of course. But it'll be interesting to see if McGarry is fit enough. Does he come back in? It'll be interesting.
I think for me, I wouldn't be bringing him back in necessarily to this game, but I could see why. But with the cup final on the horizon, obviously the amount of games, Jack McKenzie is, as we've spoken about, not available for that cup final. We've got to be looking to get McGarry into the squad between now and the 17th, and not just throwing him in against Frankfurt to get minutes. We've got to be kind of building that up just so that he's used to match minutes between now and then, and we're not just throwing him in at the deep end as well. So yeah, I definitely agree. I think it will be that Frankfurt formation with Bojan leading the line, that midfield three that we've got options with, and I don't really see personally any changes to the back line. I think McKenzie will start, and it's not like, despite his mistakes against Celtic, Ross Duhan's not going to suddenly appear in goals as well. So I fully expect Kel to retain his place in goals and look to himself as well as those that played outfield to make amends for our last time out.
Yeah, I would agree. And another thing I suppose to keep an eye on is maybe the potential return of Shaden Morris to the bench after he'd been in training a few weeks ago. And now, you know, the time's passed by between now and then. 2 weeks, I think he's been away in Manchester meeting D-list celebrities. D-list, maybe generous. However, I hate to think what we were, Zed, but there's not that long enough.
I thought you were meaning Jaden Richardson, because I saw he was coming up. But then I realised you were speaking about that. Like, I was going to call him miniature boxer, but you know, if he suddenly started watching this podcast, I don't want him suddenly coming in and knocking me out. But I noticed as well from Instagram, it looked like Ordadi had returned to Israel over the last couple of days as well. So I'm not sure if he's been given maybe some time to go back and visit family, or if he was just over for a few days off and he's going to be returning in the next couple of days back training with the squad.
Unlikely he'll be even on the bench anyway, regardless.
Well, yeah, I know, very, very true, but just something I picked up when scouring social media this week. But yeah, I think, you know, look, as much as we don't want to accept the manner of the defeat and accept what came, that game is done, dusted, parked. We go in with a clean slate into this game against Rangers and hopefully right a few wrongs. And as you said, unfortunately, but most welcome, proving Chris Boyd right in this scenario would be ideal on Sunday and give us a nice boost to warm up nicely before that freezing cold trip to Helsinki. And of course, Callum, we'll be back. This time we will try and do a live, all being well, on the Monday night after the game against Rangers, reviewing the action from the Sunday lunchtime and looking ahead to that trip to Finland as well. Hopefully more positive on the pitch matters to discuss next time.
That would be much, much appreciated, wouldn't it? Hopefully we won't have to basically copy and paste this episode after that.
Absolutely. So if you have been watching on YouTube, thank you very much for tuning in. Remember to leave a like and comment your thoughts down below. Subscribe if you're new. If you've been listening in on audio, remember to hit that follow button if you don't already. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. Sports Social Podcast Network.